most people don't question their fear-based or self-negating thoughts, but tend to readily accept them, regardless of whether the destructive thoughts have any basis in reality. People can let them invade their minds and hijack their confidence and well-being. Our guest today is Aura Natridge, and Aura's book is entitled Says Who. It confronts the negative and fear-based thoughts, holding people hostage so that the thoughts no longer exert their influence. Coming to realize that the thought isn't real or valid and that it's ultimately useless to them allows people to successfully align their inner dialogue with their goals and dreams. And it's our pleasure today from Los Angeles to have Aura Natridge. She's the founder and president of the Institute of Transformational Thinking and the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. Aura, it's nice to have you on the program again.
Hi, Wynn. Thank you so much for having me again.
Okay. So, we're going to attack this negativity from both your point of view and from my point of view as an addictionologist and see if we can bring some hope and light into our listeners today on negativity, negative thinking, negative thoughts. So, first of all, what prompted you to write this book?
Well, the story is long, and I'll try to give you the condensed version of it. I experienced what I call my first Says Who moment when I was not quite 15 years old, and I had an older sister. I'm the youngest of four. I had an older sister, two older sisters. This one has passed, and an older brother who has also passed. And my older sister, Esther, had a very severe mental breakdown when I was, again, not quite 15 years old, and it was devastating. It was heartbreaking. It was tragic. And it really, really impacted me deeply. And I loved her beyond words. I idolized her. She was quite a radiant spirit and unfortunately suffered this fate. And it was, as I said, devastating. I went into fight or flight when that happened to her. And when we go into fight or flight, we go into tremendous fear because we perceive what is happening around us as life-threatening and threatening to our survival. And that's what happened to me. I didn't know any of this at the time, but when I went into fight or flight, I was so terrified by what happened to her that the thought that came to the foreground of my mind was, oh my God, what happened to her will happen to me. That was just a thought that was born out of fear. And I buried that thought. I buried it really deep within my subconscious. And what happened is I started to experience, and I talk about it in Says Who, I experienced what I call the side effect of a thought gone buried. And I started to experience anxiety. And it got worse and worse and worse, and I didn't know why. I had no idea why anxiety was growing, and it followed me around for a long time, and I never got the answer as to why, and eventually I went into the film industry. I became an actress, and I started to work rather young. I started to work right out of high school, and my career took off very quickly, and this anxiety never left me, and what happened is it started to rear its head. So much so that it started to impact the quality of my life and interfere with my career. So I knew I was in serious trouble, and I knew that I needed help. And so fast forward, I took a deep dive into the psycho-spiritual world. I went to try everything and anything I could to help myself. And finally, by the good grace of the divine, went into Jungian analysis, and that is where I really was able to find out the source of my fear, which was that thought that I was going to go crazy like my sister. I worked through it. I did tremendous work to absolve myself of that fear and to understand that that thought was born out of nothing but fear. I created it. I fabricated it. I gave birth to a thought simply out of my terror. And so fast forward again, I became a life coach and I started to coach people and started to encounter their fears and seeing how their fears were impacting their life and getting in the way of them not being able to have a good quality of life. And it was with one client in particular that came to me, and she shared what I call a boogeyman thought, a fear-based thought that she had, just like I had my fear-based thought. She had a fear-based thought, and her fear-based thought was that she was going to be homeless and penniless. And when I was coaching her, the question "says who" came up in my mind. I don't know why, but it just came through me. And when I asked her "says who," it kind of stopped her in her tracks. I said, "says who? Who said you're going to be homeless and penniless? We need to really challenge that thought." And I took it one step further, and I asked her, which has become the second "says who" methods question, "have I heard someone say this thought before?" And that came up for me as well. This was like truly just being birthed through me with this session. I asked her, "have you heard someone say this thought before, that you were going to be homeless and penniless?" And that's when she broke down in front of me, and she started to cry. And it was a big aha moment for her to realize that she grew up with a father who was unstable financially and had gone from job to job to job, and he was a rageaholic, and he would come home and say, "we're going to be homeless, we're going to be penniless, we're going to live out in the streets." And she would become terrified as a young girl. So in essence, what she had done is she had carried a fear-based thought that did not originate with her into her own life, and it was impacting the quality of her life. This questioning that I'd done to her had such an impact on her that I knew I was onto something very important. And so that is where the book began, and it was birthed from my questioning of this woman's fear-based thought.
I see. So a lot of what the theory and what you use in your process of "says who" has to do with fear. And I was thinking, back some time ago, I read Marianne Williamson. She said, there's only two emotions. One is fear, and the other is love. How does that impact what you do?
By the way, Marianne is a very dear, dear friend of mine. I love her dearly. And the beauty of her work really does focus on love, first and foremost. And she's right. I mean, love and fear, isn't that what propels us? Isn't that what inspires us, and isn't that also in the fear department what torments us? So I agree with that. I do think that all thought creates emotion, and I say that in "says who." Thought create feelings, you know, emotions, create behavior, create actions, create reality. You have to connect the dots. The power of our thoughts is what creates our fear, which is one of our most controlling emotions that we are at the mercy of. So I work primarily with those fear-based thoughts. I work with the negative and fear-based and what I call limiting and more recently useless thoughts. Because why I call them useless is that they really dominate our mind and they don't support our well-being and they don't really add anything positive or favorable to our lives. So my work is really about the "says who" method. It's about questioning and challenging those fear-based thoughts so that we can love ourselves better, if you want to go back to the love that Marianne suggests, in that we have to be able to love ourselves by transforming the thoughts that interfere with our self-love.
In the Bible it says that we should be anxious of nothing. We shouldn't worry, because practically when you worry, 90% of this stuff never comes true. And the other 10%, you couldn't do anything about it anyway.
Right.
So is this something that you try to teach, as far as anxiety goes?
Absolutely. You know, as someone who really suffered terribly with anxiety, which was born from a thought, as I described my experience firsthand, I have a chapter in my book called The Something to Worry About Thoughts. Yes, I mean, we do worry. We have all sorts of a garden variety of thoughts that occupy our mind that are very similar. You know, we're very similar, more than we are different. We have worried thoughts. We have judgmental thoughts. We have the inner critic. We have all of that, do you know? And as I speak about Wynn, and you heard me mention this before, we think, this is a supposed statistic, we think between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day. That's a tremendous amount of thinking that's going on in our minds daily. And apparently a very high percentage of that thinking is negative. And we need to be aware of that. Because if we don't have an awareness of it, we're at the effect of it. And if we are at the effect of it, we really can't reach our goals. We can't realize our dreams. Because we are struggling constantly to battle the negative thoughts that occupy our mind, which is a choice that we have, to allow them to live in our mind or to use what my technique is called the release and replace technique to release a negative thought that does not serve our well-being and replace it with one that does.
Your publicist sent me a little white paper, and it says, ask 7 questions to banish negative thoughts. And I know that we possibly touch briefly on some of this, but let's go over those 7 questions, and you just give me a little input from your point of view, okay?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, says who, the number one question, also the title of my book, says who, as I explained to you how that was, how that had come to be with my own client, who was very much at the effect of a negative thought. Says who is the very first question, a very important question to ask ourselves. Says who? Who is saying this thought in my mind? We can't change our thoughts unless we're willing to own them. And so by asking that question, says who is saying that I'm worthless? Who is saying that I'm unlovable? Who is saying that I am, you know, not worthy, will never meet my soulmate, will never have a happy life, and on and on and on, all the things that we tell ourselves that are so unkind and hurtful and sometimes downright destructive. Says who is the first question. Who is saying this thought in my mind? I am. We must claim ourselves as the sayer, as the thinker of this thought.
Okay, from my point of view, negative thinking is a addictive behavior. And a lot of the problems with negative thinking comes from having a low self-esteem, which could have come from your parents, your grandparents, your associates, business partners, whatever, that drives down your self-esteem, makes you think that you're not good enough, that you couldn't get this right, all these kind of negative thoughts and everything. In your experience, what percentage of the people can verbalize who says who? Who has said these things to them? And is it important from your therapy?
Yes, it is for me to really encourage people to not to hide or stuff down or pretend that they don't have these negative thoughts. Because if you don't own them, you can't understand them, and then you can't change them. So that's why I propose these 7 questions. You know, we can't change our thoughts unless we challenge our thinking mind. We must ask ourselves, why are we agreeing with the thoughts that we're telling ourselves, why we are accepting them so readily, as you said. You know, you cannot change anything unless you confront it. It's not going to go away on its own. It's just not going to magically disappear. You have to do the work. So the says who question, the first question, and you know, you mentioned addiction, and you mentioned, yes, I mean, there's compulsivity in all of us to varying degrees. It can go extreme into addictive behavior, and then the choices that we make for ourselves based from that addictive behavior. Again, remember, I say thoughts create emotions, create behavior, create actions, create reality. And the next thing you know, you're living a reality that is born from a thought that propels you and compels you to behave in a certain way. So these questions are, I believe, imperative. It's imperative to question why we think what we think and why we do what we do. Do you know?
Okay. So your second question, and we've kind of talked about this. Have I heard someone say this thought before?
Yes. This is a very important question because, like what you just said, so much of the lacking of self-esteem does come from our childhood, and it does come from things that were said to us, that were told to us about us. You're not this enough. You're not smart enough. You're not athletic enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not thin enough. You're not this enough and not that enough. You know, whether it's a parent, an authority figure, a loved one, the bully on the schoolyard. You know, we've all been told things going way, way back. I coach a lot of adults that are still at the effect of what they've carried over from childhood into adulthood, of what was said to them that wasn't even born from their own thinking mind. So, you know, that's a very important question. Have I heard someone say this thought before? Like in the case of my client, she was at the effect of a fear-based thought that was her father's that she had taken on as her own, and it was affecting the quality of her life.
The next question is, do I like this thought?
Right. That's one of my personal favorites. Very easy question to ask ourselves. How many of those thoughts that we tell ourselves that are not even likable? We tell ourselves so many things that are just so distasteful. They're just downright unlikable. So, you know, I've worked with a lot of people. I remember working with a woman that was really at the effect of telling herself this really berating negative thought. And I just leaned in very gently to her. I said, can I ask you something? And she said, sure. And I said, do you like that thought? And she said, no. No. And she got very emphatic. And she says, not only don't I like it, I hate it. And I said, so, okay, well, why don't you just be with that for a minute, that you are allowing yourself to be beat up by a thought that you not only don't like, but you actually hate. And she went like, wow, boy, a lot of truth in that one. And it really was impactful for her to recognize that she lets herself be tormented by a thought that she not only doesn't like, but that she actually hates. Now, these are logical questions to ask ourselves.
The next question, does this thought make you feel better?
Right. You know, how many of your negative thoughts or even one actually makes you feel better? Does it inspire you? Does it make you motivated? Does it make you get up in the morning, yawn, and go, yeah, that negative, mean thought I'm telling myself is actually making me feel better? Not. No, they don't. Positive, life-affirming, constructive, productive thoughts make us feel better. We know the difference. We can feel the difference in our bodies. We know the difference between a thought that makes us feel better and a thought that does not.
Right. Okay. Does this thought work for me?
Again, logical. How is your negative thought working for you? Is it motivating you to go get that job? Is it motivating you to want to be in a relationship? Is it even motivating you to want to go out and garden? I mean, what is that negative thought doing for you? How is it working for you? Make a list of the things that your negative thought is doing to work for you favorably. You know, you'll be hard put to come up with ways in which your negative thought is working for you favorably.
I remember Dr. Phil says all the time, well, how is that working for you?
Right.
If it's not working for you, you should get rid of it.
That's right. Easy to say, right? But you got to do the work. You got to really, you know, ask yourself these questions and come up with answers for yourself. You know, you have to have the own experience for you. That's what I'm offering up to people, is I'm saying, look, take that step and ask yourself these questions and come up with answers. And try my release and replace technique. You're going to like it.
Am I in control of this thought?
You know, so many people will say to me, oh, Aura, I feel so taken over by that thought. It just beats me down. It wears me out. It makes me feel so bad about myself. I feel like I'm tormented by this thought. Well, guess what? You're acting like your thought is separate from you, or your mind is separate from you, like your mind is this separate entity that has some kind of power over you, like it lives outside of you. It's your mind. These are your thoughts. You are giving them power. You are allowing them to have power over you. You are allowing them to berate you. You are allowing them to abuse you. It's hard for people to accept that. You know, left to our own devices, we don't want to work so hard. But this is really what I'm asking for you, asking of you to step up, take responsibility, you know, own your mind, own the thoughts that you have in your mind so that you don't feel that that thought is having power over you, because it is having power over you because you're allowing for it.
And finally, do I want to keep this thought or let it go?
You know, once you've done yourself a big favor, I might add, and ask yourself all these questions. First, as to owning that thought that you're just so sick and tired of telling yourself. You have identified it as either yourself saying it to you as your inner dialogue, or you've recognized that it's someone else, a father, a parent, a mother, an authority figure, the bully from third grade, whoever. You don't like that thought. It really doesn't make you feel better. It certainly doesn't work for you favorably. And you're tired of it having control over you. By the time you ask yourself the seventh question, do I want to keep this thought or let it go, I believe you're going to be just really ready, emphatically, passionately, if you will, ready to let that thought go, finally.
So, Aura, tell our listeners about how to get a copy of your book and about your website.
You can get my book easily on Amazon, so fast. You know, you'll get it in a day or so. I would suggest that's the easiest way to get it. You know, for those of you that maybe aren't online, maybe you can have a friend get it for you. It's very easily gotten. You know, maybe you have a local bookstore. There's not a lot of them left anymore that can order the book for you. Barnes & Noble, a lot of book outlets, it's available to order online for sure. My website is auranadrich.com, or you can go to aura at theist.org. That's my institution, the Institute for Transformational Thinking. So that's how you can reach me directly.
There is a considerable amount of talk about, in the meditation field, mindfulness meditation. And I was wondering if you could explain this briefly to my listeners and then tell how it impacts and relates to your book, Says Who.
Well, first of all, the simple definition of mindfulness is this. Mindfulness is being in the present moment with total awareness. Now, what does that really mean in that? How do we apply that into our lives daily? A moment, as we know, is, what, 60 seconds? And most often we are anything but present in the moments of our lives. We're present when something gets our attention. We're present when something is enjoyable for us and we want to savor it and we really want to be with that experience. But most often than not, we're not in the present moment. We're either in the past, thinking about what has already happened, or we're lamenting or feeling sorry or regretting or wishing we could redo what has already happened, or in the future, which has not yet come, and we're anxious about what might or could happen. But the moment that's existing right now, which is what we're experiencing when we're having this conversation, we're in the present. I don't know about you, but I'm not thinking about anything other than spending this time with you, having this delightful conversation. So we're present. So mindfulness teaches us how to stay present so that when we step out of a moment, we're aware that we are not present. And through developing this quality, which each and every one of us has, it's an inherent quality in us, like intuition, you know, like kindness, like compassion. We have it there. We just need to use it more. We need to really utilize these beautiful gifts that live inside us, like mindfulness, which is being thoughtful and being present. And the more you develop your mindfulness skills, the more you start to appreciate your life, the more you start to appreciate the gifts of being alive, and you are more in gratitude for being alive and being healthy and, again, having these abundant gifts that we experience day in and day out. My work is very connected to mindfulness because you have to be present to be aware of the thoughts that you're thinking and to be present of when a negative or fear-based thought comes up so that you can catch it before it starts to wreak havoc. You know, our thoughts can be real troublemakers. So when you start to be present, when a negative or fear-based thought comes up, you can go, ah, okay, here's a negative thought trying to create some trouble for me. Let me be with it. And I also talk about in Sesu how to be the observer of your thoughts, not the reactor. Because oftentimes a thought will come in, we'll get upset, we'll get angry, someone will piss us off, someone will cut us off in traffic, and what do? Boom. We go into reactive mode, and we immediately say things that we wish we hadn't. So mindfulness is a wonderful skill to develop. It helps us to be, again, very present. It helps also, I believe, heighten our senses because then you start to go into a mindful awareness about everything. It becomes mindful eating. You taste your food better because you're really present. You're slowed down. You're not rushing through a meal. Mindful communication. You're talking to somebody and you're really listening. You're really hearing what they have to say. You're not racing like, oh, where do I have to be next? And let me talk about myself. You're really there. You're present to hear what someone else has to say, and you also have a mindful awareness of what you want to say to them. Do I really want to say this right now? Is what I'm about to say thoughtful? Is it kind? Is it useful? Is it helpful? Do you know, what I'm going to say to this person, could it hurt them? Do you know, mindfulness starts to still into all the areas of our life. I consider it a gift that keeps on giving. And we all, again, have it. So for those that, you know, I know that mindfulness has seeped into the mainstream, which I'm so excited about as a mindfulness teacher. And I don't want anybody to feel left out, whether it's talking about mindfulness or talking about meditation. Everybody on the planet can experience this. This is available for everybody. And I want everybody to know that. All you need to do is to be willing to try, to be open-minded, and to say, hey, I want to be in on this. I want to experience mindful awareness. I want to experience getting quiet with myself. I want to experience not always being so busy in the doing, but allow myself to be grateful in the beingness of who I am, in the beauty, in the divine essence of who I am. To drop into that more by having a mindful awareness of who I am at the core of my being. And each and every one of us is a beautiful, divine human being.
You spoke just a moment ago about being a conversationalist, a good conversation, and we know that we have two ears and one mouth, and if we want to be a good conversationalist, we will try to listen twice as often or as long as we talk. And that reminds me of a story back about 15 years ago. There was this lady from, I think it was Chicago, and she wanted me to promote her senior beauty pageant. And I can't remember her name, but let's call her Betty. So my lead-off question in the interview for the program was, Betty, tell me something about yourself. And Betty started talking, and we had 26 minutes of content on the program, and she talked for 26 minutes without taking a break. She didn't breathe long enough for me to get in a second question. And then the show was over, and I said, Betty, it was nice to talk to you today. And when we disconnected from the server, she said, you know what? You're the best interviewer I ever had. Now, you might think that that's funny or sad or whatever like that, but Betty didn't know that a good conversation came from listening more than you talk. Right. And so I don't know why I brought that up. I just thought it was an interesting point.
I'm glad you shared it, Wynn. I think it's a good story. I think it really is very in line with mindfulness.
So is there an example you can give, let's say, of a thought that you just couldn't shake and how that gave you personal insight into what we all need to do in order to move on with our lives?
You know, I pay close attention to my thoughts. I've become so thought-driven in that I call myself a thoughtologist. I spent a lot of time really taking deep dives into the thinking mind. Mine came out of tremendous suffering. You know, I've shared my personal story that took me on this trajectory to understand the thinking mind better. I know that so much of our suffering is based in the thoughts that we tell ourselves and that we can change that. So I spent a lot of time exploring those types of thoughts. And, you know, I wrote a book that isn't a quick fix. It's not about putting a Band-Aid on our thoughts. It's about really working with them and looking at them closely and not to be afraid of them. Negative thoughts and fear-based thoughts are of my most special interest because those are the thoughts that really do come up and they will continue to come up. We can't eradicate negative or fear-based thoughts. It's part of the human thinking mind. It's part of the human condition. It's part of our survival instincts. It's part of, you know, perhaps the old remnants of the hunter and gather parts of our brain. And so we're developing a new mind, and that's interesting to me. You know, we don't use a very high percentage of the brain. I know now I'm very interested in the neurosciences of exploring the ways in which we can expand our brain through neuroplasticity. And so with fear-based thoughts specifically, I say go towards those thoughts. I do myself, personally. I can share from my own personal experiences. When I have a fear-based thought that comes up for me, I now know that that fear is about the unknown, or it's a fear that is triggered by something that I might not be comfortable with and that probably started back in childhood. And so I say bring it on. I want to look at it because it helps me grow, it helps me evolve, and it helps me move through the fear so I can move past it and do more with my life. And I want others to experience that. So many people are paralyzed by their fear-based thoughts, and it's sad because there's a whole world that awaits you. There's so much more to be done. There's so much more that we can experience. You know, we're living longer. You know, we have all these opportunities ahead of us. It doesn't matter what's happened yesterday. You know, I know there's been a lot of suffering that people have endured. I feel very compassionate to what people have shared with me. But your life can begin anew, and new thoughts can support you in taking that first step towards your new life. So I want to be the example of that. I've moved through fear, and it has helped shape who I am today. And more fear will come, I know. You know, so I want to encourage the listeners. I want to encourage people that take this, what I call the transformational thinking journey, to know that they can change their life and that it is possible. Change is constant. That's that great quote. I don't know if it was Confucius that said it, but that change is constant. It is always happening. We just have to get out of the way and let it happen.
Or, you know, we live in a fast food society. We want everything yesterday. So How long does it take to shift from being aware of our fears and our doubts to challenging them and getting rid of them?
I say try with just one thought. You know, my saying from the Institute is changing the world one thought at a time. Let's make it more personal. Changing our lives one thought at a time. Take one thought. That's what I really encourage people to do. How about taking one thought that really is weighing heavily on you? Can you work with that one thought? You know, I do the Says Who meditation where I have people close their eyes, take a couple of breaths in and out, and I say, think of a thought that might come to your mind right now that I've asked you this question. Or maybe it's a thought that you've been carrying around for a while, or maybe it's a thought that you've been carrying around for the last 30 years. Whatever that thought is for you, take one thought and work with that one thought. And do the Says Who method. Get my book. Try the questions. Do the release and replace technique. Work with that one thought, and you will see a change in that you will see that you tried something that maybe you've never tried before, and that maybe by releasing that negative and fear-based thought and replacing it with its positive counterpart, you went, ah, you know what? That made me feel better. Wow. Okay, I think I like that. I think I like that feeling. I want to try that again. So, you know, one thought at a time. That's all I'm asking people to do, is just to try. You have nothing to lose. Just try that. So, yes, we do live in a fast everything society. We want instant everything. But we have to be willing to try. And what I'm asking people to do is not rocket science. And it's not so hard that you can't try it. These are very simple, straightforward questions to ask yourself. The Says Who questions are very user-friendly. Anybody can do them. Anybody.
We've been talking for the last 40 minutes with Aura Natridge. Her book is called Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. And Aura said the best way to get that book is on Amazon. I just wanted to say that in my work with addiction, that there's about 30-plus different addictive behaviors that I counsel people on, and one of them is negative thinking. And it's a very popular one. And you can see examples of that any day, anywhere, if you just listen for people who think their cup is half full, that nothing will ever work out right, and all the other different kinds of aspects of negative thinking. But besides getting Aura's book, you ought to get my book because it gives you a plan that you can do at home to get rid of negative thinking. And the book is called Freedom from Addiction and then the number 3. And it's available on Amazon also. The website is freedomfromaddiction3.com, and there's a lot of information there that will help you with any of these 30-something different addictive behaviors. And so both Aura and I would like to see everybody that's listening to be less negative as a result of what they've heard. And Aura, is there anything that I've skipped over, glossed over, that you want to add before we say goodbye for the day?
Well, first of all, Wynn, I want to just thank you so much for having me back. I've so enjoyed speaking with you again. And I do want to mention that having formed my new organization, the IFTT, the Institute for Transformational Thinking, one of the things that I am doing under the Institute is I have an online thought coach certification training program. I've done 2 highly successful programs that people from all over the world take the course and become certified thought coaches. It's a niche of coaching that is new. I'm very excited about it. I've been told it's rather revolutionary. I was a life coach for 10 years, and I realized that I was really coaching people's thoughts, hence why I created the thought coach niche of coaching. So you can go learn more about that if you're interested on my website, auranatrich.com, and I say that thought coaches are thought leaders, and I'm hoping that these thought coaches from all over the world will help other people come to know their own thinking mind better and be able to transform their thoughts from negative to positive, constructive, productive, life-affirming thoughts that can help change their lives and ultimately help change the world.
Well, Aura, you're doing some terrific work, and I honor you for that, and
you,
hope that it just keeps on and you get more and more people who listen to you and the advice that you give, which is remarkable.
Oh, Wynn, thank you so much, you too, and the work that you're doing.
Okay, so until next time then, I'll say goodbye, and thank you for being on our program today.